Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome, rally friends, to a very special edition of Dirtfish's Spin the Rally Pod. Well, as we all know, the world is struggling under the strain of having to cope with the consequences of the coronavirus. You know, the virus, it's not just shutting down motorsport, but giving the entire planet a hard reset. And while the vast majority of us, well, we're doing our bit, aren't we, to fight this deadly virus by staying at home, by sitting on our settees, and by keeping our families close to us. But there are some within the rallying community who are going above and beyond in their extraordinary efforts to do what they can. So in this special tribute to the heroes within our community, we talk to the trauma nurse, who just happens to be a massive rally fan, the team boss making his engineering brilliance available to develop new medical devices, to the driver who owes his life to the dedicated health professionals working tirelessly against this insidious virus, to the tire supremo who gives up every minute of his spare time to drive a volunteer ambulance in Italy's worst affected region, and to the co-driver doing all he can to offer support to his dreadfully affected local community. You know, it's an emotional but uplifting journey, that's absolutely for sure. So, you know, as this dreadful virus tracks across continents, we've seen different countries facing the problems it causes. And we're hearing time and time again about the medical teams stepping up to the front line. People like Jason Anthony, a rally fan like all of us, he works in the emergency trauma room of a hospital in Philadelphia. And I wanted to know what an average day is like for him at this difficult time.
Sure, yeah. Thanks for giving me the chance to talk about it. So my day job is I'm an emergency trauma nurse. I've been doing it for about 10 years. It's a job that even on the best of days can be stressful at times. So these days with the situation we're in, it's definitely a grind. It's tiring emotionally, you know, tiring in every sense of the word, emotionally and mentally with the things we have to process, and then just physically with the fact of all the equipment that we're trying to take on and off, and the long shifts. So it is a grind. I mean, we're fortunate here where I am in Philadelphia that it's not quite so dire as, you know, the situations we're seeing in places like New York or Italy, but at the same time, it's not good, and we don't know if it's going to get to that point. I think that's the toughest thing is we don't know how things are going to go and when this is going to be over. And so we kind of have to face each day as it comes and do the best we can with the cards we're dealt. And as long as we do that, that's what we go home to at the end of the night with the knowledge that we did the best we could. And that's all we can do.
You know what, Louis? It is difficult for us to comprehend because, yes, it is your life, it is your vocation. But you put everything on the line. Every time you put on that PPE when you go into work, I don't know how you deal with it. How do you find the mental fortitude to know that to help others, you have to risk your own life? It must be a very difficult situation.
I mean, it's something that at times it crosses the mind.
I was just going to say, I will let you answer that, and that's awfully rude of me. I'm very sorry. But
no worries.
You're not military medics. You're not frontline military medics. You're a trauma medic, and a trauma medic, a trauma nurse, does their best to make people better who are very, very sick. But a trauma nurse, a trauma medic, are you prepared? Do they give you any training in how to deal with a completely different situation? Yes, you are still trying your very best to make people better, but you are risking your life in doing that. And that is not, I would imagine, your normal everyday working process.
Yeah, maybe not. I'll give you a rally analogy. How about that? This is a rally podcast, so I'll give you a rally analogy. I think, yes, this isn't necessarily what I expected or necessarily signed up for when I chose to become an emergency trauma nurse, but in a way it is as well. And in a way, this is my onempoya, in a sense. You know, I think of that stage that Chris Meek drove through onempoya, I think it was 2016. And you just knew at the end of the stage that this is what he had lived and trained to do. And I feel the same way about what I'm doing now. This is the situation. This is the type of thing that makes your career. And this is the type of thing that you're going to remember for the rest of your life. And it feels, quite honestly, more like a privilege to be able to do what I do in this setting, to be able to be a part of this, and to be able to actually go out and do something to make a difference rather than being stuck at home waiting and wondering about what might happen. And so, I would say it's like tackling onempoya for a rally driver. It's what ultimately you live to do, and it's why you got into what you do for a living.
You know, it's really hard not to get emotional hearing Jason speak with so much passion. And we'll hear from him again a little later on. So we've heard from the medic, but what's it like to be a patient? And a patient who's had to be ventilated? Well, British rally stalwart Steve Perez is a man who has had first-hand experience of what it's like to be kept alive on a ventilator.
For those who remember, just in 2018, I was on the Ypres rally, and while they were refueling my Lancia Strata, the car basically exploded, and I was airlifted to Ghent Hospital because I had serious burns to my hands and my head. And during that time, I'd also somehow contracted pneumonia. Oof. And I was put on a ventilator there for 10 days, a mechanical ventilator, which obviously we're seeing an awful lot about these days. I can just say it was quite a horrendous experience. You can probably tell even now I'm still suffering from somewhat croaky voice, from having the tubes put down my throat. It damaged some of my vocal cords. I mean, hopefully I've got no further damage, but it's most horrendous experience you could possibly imagine. Usually people are put into an induced coma, but during that coma, I had the most horrendous nightmares. To some extent, they still still recur. One very common nightmare was that I was drowning. And I suppose effectively that's what happens when you have pneumonia. You drown. And I felt I was fighting to get out of this cage, if you like, underwater. And fortunately, I survived. But it really did make me think, about what a wonderful job the health professionals do, whether it's in Belgium or here in the UK. I mean, those people, came in every day. I was a piece of meat, and they turned me and changed me, and they completely selfless. And I feel really bad because I can't remember most of the names now, and they just came into my life, saved my life, and then disappeared and went off. That's other people's lives.
That's incredible, Steve. It's an incredible story, and I guess that is what we're seeing now during this terrible crisis. What a story, Steve. But you've got very diverse business interests, clearly. But I don't suppose you have the capability to manufacture these machines, these ventilators that are in such short supply just now. But you are very, very much doing your part. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing with your hotel just now, Steve.
Well, we've got the Casa Hotel in Chesterfield, and I was contacted you know, on Twitter by a nurse at the Chesterfield Royal Hospital, and said she was working really hard, and would it be possible to get a room at the hotel just so she could get some rest? And I kind of thought about it and said, no problem. And then as I thought further about it, I thought there must be a lot of other frontline NHS staff there, desperate for just a good night's sleep, get away from the kids and the family, and just to get away from it all. So I put something out on Facebook and said if any frontline staff wanted a good night's sleep, a nice hot meal, and clear our minibar out, just to contact me. And to be honest, I've been absolutely deluged by emails to the extent I'm struggling coping with it all now. And we've literally provided hundreds of rooms for NHS staff, and many of my own staff. They've actually volunteered, to come in and help prepare meals, and we've sent meals up to the hospital, and they've done it all out of their own time. They've offered themselves to help.
Wow.
And I'm very proud of them.
Steve, I tell you what, I'm welling up listening to you. I have to say, it's a remarkable response, and you know, as you say, you might have forgotten the names of those doctors and nurses in Belgium, but my goodness me, you are doing your bit for the doctors and nurses of your local area.
Yeah, well, I think all of us, I'm sure there's things, all of us as businesses, we can do. Unfortunately, I can't make, ventilators or anything clever like that, but we know how to make a good paella or a good pie, and we just keep on doing the things we do best.
Again, tremendously emotional and really very humbling just to hear of people giving back and to hear firsthand how it feels to be so ill and to have the need to be medically ventilated. These are extraordinary times, and extraordinary innovation is possible in extraordinary times. David Richards, he's the chairman of both Motorsport UK and of the ProDrive group of companies. Well, he told us about their response.
Well, I think everybody has wrong to single out any one individual or any one company, because I think the whole motorsport community is, and I think rallying perhaps more so than any other aspect of motorsport, is built around communities and volunteers and people that work together. And at times like this, you see that really come to the fore. And I've noticed it in so many initiatives that I've seen from local motor clubs around the country in my role as chairman of the governing body of Motorsport UK. And just the sort of things that, those are the people that really come to the fore when the chips are down. And it's great to see.
Well, as I mentioned, you've got quite a diverse range of interests, David. But let's talk about the engineering side of things. You guys are switching over production to produce parts, I believe, for ventilators. How did that come about, and how did you go about that process?
Well, it's not quite the way you explain it. It's the government about a month ago put out a request for any companies that could help with the production of ventilators to put their names forward. At the month ago in this country, we only had about 6,000 or 7,000 ventilators available, and they wanted to have more than double that. So the problem being that the supply, as I understand it, the basic supply of components for the existing ventilators was limited. So they were looking to alternative solutions for this and finding alternative ways of manufacturing or a different design of ventilators so that they could up the production levels. We put our names forward straight away for that. We felt we got a lot of the skill sets required for it. But it was a couple of weeks before we even heard back or heard anything at all. When we did hear back, we understood what was required. And we partnered with Cambridge University and a company called Whittle Laboratories down in Cambridge as well, who had a design but didn't have a means of manufacturing it. Mm. And so over the last couple of weeks, we've been working with them night and day. The small group of engineers, we've retained a team back at ProDrive. Most of the other people are off furlough because there's no motorsport at the moment, but we've retained a team of people there who've been working on this night and day for the last couple of weeks to come up with a production solution for this design that the Cambridge University team have come up with. Unfortunately, we've just learned in the last 48 hours that they don't want to carry this forward. The NHS or the Pease Consulting, who have been appointed by the government to select these solutions for this ventilator. And so I haven't yet had the chance to speak to the team to understand exactly what's behind that decision and what we can do next. We still think that what we've got is a viable solution, and it may be viable for in the longer term. It might just be that, you know, we couldn't produce it in the time required. So, but it could be useful for other countries around the world, and that's something we're certainly going to investigate next.
Yeah, well, listen, it was quite some effort, quite some response from yourself personally, David, and from your whole team there. But that isn't the only way that you have been involved in responding to this terrible crisis that we're all going through. You know, you do have a couple of hotels, don't you? And you've made use of those in terms of community use. Well, down south.
Yeah, the hotels are closed down clearly at the moment, as the restaurants and that side of things. But one of the hotels we're in a small village down in Cornwall, and on a sort of peninsula, fairly isolated. So we've turned over one of the facilities at the hotels with computers and telephones to a local support group who can use it to help people who are isolated and help those that can't get down to the shops themselves. So we're just making it available to them. It's the support group that are doing all the work and doing all the running around, and they're doing an incredible job for local community here in Cornwall.
You know what? What I find just really quite uplifting, David, is that, you know, there are companies, there are people out there that clearly have a focus in their day-to-day life. And you know, your focus over your career has been building a tremendous brand, a tremendously successful company. And quite often we don't see the more human side of you know, these business people, these companies. And we are seeing that now. And it is so uplifting to see that just about in every community around the country.
No, I think it's at times like this you pull on the resources of your organisation, and organisations that have the right culture and right attitude and are responsible for the society they live in behave appropriately. I've unfortunately seen examples of the opposite in the last few weeks, but there we go. But certainly, you know, the team at ProDrive, the team down here in my hotels down in Cornwall, all of them are pulled together, and there hasn't been a single person who hasn't just said, what can I do next? How can I help? You know, this is my responsibility. And so it's been really encouraging for me to see that was the attitude of everybody, and nobody ever flinched. It was just, let's get on with it.
That's on for just one second. It could be a very drawn out process, this returning to the stages, in particular to the rallying stages. How are you preparing for life post-coronavirus, because it is going to be very different? The whole landscape will be quite different that we emerge out into.
Well, as we sit here today, I must admit that most of the focus has been on how we close things down appropriately, how we minimise our costs, whether that's the overheads of Motorsport UK, and of course how we help the clubs. We've just announced this week that we put a fund together to help motor clubs to get through this period. There'll be clubs that will have expenditure and costs that they hadn't anticipated, events that have had to be cancelled for which they'll see no income from, and yet they've got some of the costs. So we put together a fund to help the clubs through this period. We're clearly not going to be any form of motorsport till the end of June at the moment. I suspect that'll have to be extended to the end of July. Might just be that we can run the Grand Prix behind closed doors at Silverstone in July. I hope we can sort of run the Grand Prix. And Formula E has the same set of problems, and that's their return to the UK this year. But grassroots motorsport is the real crux of it. And that's how people get together. That's it. Built their cars over the winter. That's their enjoyment, their passion. And so finding ways to invigorate that again and invigorate club motorsport is key to us. And the funds we put together, I think at the end of the day, if we haven't used them to help clubs to sort of survive this period, we might allocate more funds to invigorate things and kick things off again in the future and help promote motorsport in the UK. But I think, you know, at times like this, we can actually do ourselves a great favour. We can either be a sort of sport that hides away and people sort of regard us as environmentally unfriendly and not sort of, you know, regard it as a true sport. Or we can be part of the community. We can help with the community activities and doing things that others perhaps haven't got the facilities to do. We've got this great volunteer organisation that can support people at these difficult times. We can become more relevant. And in the future, I hope to see that us doing that more and more, because we must make motorsport relevant to make it sustainable for the long term.
That was ProDrive's David Richards speaking with me earlier this week. And David spoke about how the rally world is well used to being a community that helps out. But it's funny how it takes situations like this difficult one to find out more about people we thought we knew. Take Mario Isola, for example. By day, he's Pirelli's head of motorsport. But did you know that for the last 3 decades, he's also been a volunteer ambulance driver?
Yeah, that's correct. I did it. I started when I was 18, and so is 32 years, because I'm quite old now. But
you certainly don't look it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. But when I came back from Melbourne, I contacted the medical doctor that is the director of the association, responsible for the association. And she told me it's better that you stay a couple of weeks at home because of the flights. You never know if you get in contact with anybody that is positive. So for 2 weeks after Melbourne, I stayed at home, and then I started again with my activity, because now more than ever it's necessary to do that. We have one ambulance that is just dedicated for the emergency system, and in these days we have two ambulances, and we have volunteers that are delivering medicine to the people at home. We have volunteers that are used at the call center. There is a call center for this emergency, so people can have information on what is going on. And obviously, because they need a lot of people to answer to the calls. There is a number of phone calls that is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I was there for a couple of shifts, and you don't have time to have a snack during the 8 hours, because you have to answer the phone every 5 minutes, and that's all. So we are busy with all that, hoping that this is going to stop very soon, but we need to respect the directive of our governments. Say at the moment the only solution is to stay at home, avoid contacts, and that's all. I cannot tell you that it's not risky to go out on the ambulance. We are protected by all the DPIs, but it's also there is a strange feeling. We are like Ghostbusters, you know, with a suit, with glasses, with a mask, with double gloves, and so on, because you never know, even if it's not a call mission for coronavirus, you don't know when you arrive if the person is positive or not, so you have to protect yourself. That's all.
It's worth pointing out that you're in the heart of the Lombardy region as well, aren't you? You know, where unfortunately we've seen so many cases. What's the impact on your local community? What's it been like?
In Milan, for what I saw, people are respecting the directives, and the other night I was out on my night shift on the ambulance, and there was nobody around. That's good news. Obviously, that all this situation has a big impact on our community. Milan is a big city, and it's really strange to see that everything is closed. Shops, restaurants, everything is closed. Mm. And it's not normal, you know. In during a normal period, when I'm in my night shift, even at 4 a.m., you have people around, disco, yeah, clubs, everything, traffic. And to drive the ambulance in Milan without anybody on the road is really a strange feeling. I remember when I started 30 years ago, there were some nights with nobody around, but it was a different period. Now it's really strange. And in Bergamo, Brescia, all that area that are even more affected, because they are smaller communities with more cases, it's even worse. We had to send some ambulances from Milan to that those areas to support our colleagues. And we are trying to help each other. Obviously, it's important that there is this kind of availability. I have to say that I was really surprised that I don't have news of any of our volunteers that said, no, I'm not going out because it's dangerous. So right. Everybody, even obviously doctors, nurses, they are doing an incredible job, but also volunteers that do that for free. Nobody stepped back and said, no, I don't want to take the risk. So it's our duty at the moment to do that, and it's correct to do that.
I think, you know, if this crisis has taught us one thing, it's taught us that, you know, we have genuine heroes in our day-to-day life, these people who, like yourself, that work in the health industry. And you know, we can't thank you people enough. It's incredible. And, you know, in England, in London around, we've started clapping on a Thursday night. And it is some of the most emotional scenes. You know, it's kind of bringing the world together.
I think that also from negative situations like this one, we can learn a lot. And sometime, I remember when I had the opportunity to talk about this activity in the past, I was always saying that this type of volunteer activity is giving me the possibility to stay with my feet on the ground. I mean, because you realize also in a normal situation that a lot of people are less lucky than you, and at the end of the day we are in a very nice environment. I had the opportunity to do the job that I love, and in a fantastic environment. It was GTB4, World Rally Championship, and now Formula One, or motorsport in general. So we are very lucky, and doing that one night per week, you realize, okay, the world is not all this gold and glamour and this kind of stuff. So I told this before, and now it's even more evident, and it's important that we stop fighting for stupid stuff and we focus on important stuff like that. There are a lot of people that are doing a lot for the community. It was quite emotional when I went to my base, my association, the other day. I jumped in, and there is a wall that is like, I don't know, 20 meters long, with all the messages from the people thanking us for what we are doing. And we are just doing what I'm doing since 30 years. It's nothing different. Doctors and nurses as well. It's nice to see that people recognize that, realize that we do that, because at the end of the day, it's a big personal satisfaction. It's I think that a big part of the reason why volunteers are doing this job is, yeah, to give help to the other people, but also to get personal satisfaction and something positive for ourselves. In this situation, there is a lot that is coming back in this respect.
That's Pirelli's head of motorsport, Mario Isola, speaking to Dirtfish's senior writer, David Evans, one of so many people volunteering their spare time to help others. Now, I've been hearing what Hyundai co-driver Carlos Del Barrio's been up to back in Spain. Carlos, we all know that in Spain right now you're going through a really terrible, terrible time. But really, since you got back from Mexico, you've been incredibly busy. You've been volunteering your time with the Civil Defence Force. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, basically, we are trying to help out all the neighbourhoods here. I live in a village surrounded by many little villages as well. So we are giving out face masks. We are doing the shopping for the old people. We are also spraying this liquid. This combination is mix of water and sodium hypochlorite, just to try and stop the virus spread. So basically, these kind of things, and to be available 24 hours a day for the people, to help people.
That's quite a remarkable community response, isn't it? And what we know, as I said, just how tough it's been in Spain. But it is amazing how people are pulling together in these difficult times.
Yeah, it's incredible. Especially where I live here in this village, every people is helping each other. It's incredible. Well, here there are a lot of farmers, but there are also a lot of old people. So the most important thing is that they don't feel alone. So we must be available for them. And okay, this is very important for us, for all the community.
You know, personally, it must be great that you can actually offer something. You know, a lot of us, all we're doing is sitting on our settees at home, but you can actually do something to make a positive change. From your point of view, Carlos, that must be really, really quite incredible to actually be able to contribute in that way.
Yeah, of course, because, okay, for me, even the situation is special because I live alone, so I'm more available because I don't have a family to take care with or about, so I'm completely available for the community. This helps me a lot as well for my mind, for everything, to feel that I am I'm useful, let's say.
No, you're very, very useful indeed. It's a remarkable job you're doing, Carlos. But tell me, can you see it making a difference? Are things actually changing?
Yes, but this is going to be very slow. It's going to be, looks like a very slow recovery. So, you know, that situation in Spain and in Italy has been going from bad to worse in the past few weeks. Now we start to see the light at the end of the tunnel, but it will take some, I would say months, not weeks, months to get out.
Yeah, you know, it's a terribly worrying time, but what's really encouraging is that we're seeing a lot more love around. I'd say a lot more care and a lot more compassion. And you know what I hope is that when we come out of this, maybe we'll see a positive change in society.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, this will change things because these things are very awkward. Nobody was prepared beforehand to face something like this. But these difficult times that we are going through, at the end, somehow it will pay off. It will change things in the future, for sure. From my personal point of view, you know, all the sportsmen, professional sportsmen, normally we are very selfish because, okay, it's like that. If you want to win in your sport, it doesn't matter if it is motorsport or whatever, your character must be very selfish. You must work for your own, for your team. But now it's completely the other side of the story. We must be very helpful for the people. We must think not on our own, but on the others. It's totally different. So for me, it's been nice.
Well, absolutely. Another hero to his community, co-driver Carlos Del Barrio. And it's good to hear that he's sure that there'll be positives to come out of this horrible situation. So I've been lucky enough to speak to some very special people in this edition of the podcast. Rallying, well, it's brought us together. And I want to give the last word to Jason Anthony, our trauma nurse from Philadelphia. I'm sure you noticed that he's got a great way with words. And while we can't enjoy live action on the stages at the moment, we can certainly relive Jason's first experience of the sport that we all love.
So, yeah, my introduction to rallying. I guess it would have been 2006. I was on a trip to Galway, Ireland, actually, and grew up being a fan of motorsport. My dad kind of got me into it, watching, not participating, but so I had always had a love of cars. But when I was in Ireland, it would have been, I guess, February or March, because it was the time when the Galway International Rally was going on. And at the time, I didn't know much about rallying, but my friends and I were walking through the city center of Galway, and we heard this commotion, a big crowd of people in Air Square, which is the park in the center of the city. And we saw this stage sort of thing set up with a gantry and lights, and heard some car engines. And we kind of got drawn to it. We're like, what is this? We started asking around, like, oh, this is the rally. You know, it comes through town every year. And so they raced through the city. Like, you know, I know a bit about motorsports. I'm like, it doesn't seem like there's a city street circuit around here. And they're like, no, you know, they race out in the countryside. You should check it out tomorrow. They're going to be racing out in the country roads. And we're like, okay, well, how do we do it? Where do we get tickets? And they're like, you don't need tickets. You just show up in your car and park up and walk up to the stages. So my friends and I were like, what do you say? You want to give it a go? We're not doing anything tomorrow. And it's funny to think now we were pretty naive. We were just a bunch of American kids. So the next day it was, you know, typical February morning in Ireland, pouring rain, cold, wet. And we show up in our clean sneakers and jeans, and we're expecting that, you know, we just park on the side of the road and the cars would come by. No, it's not quite how it works. And after about a mile trek through some fields and climbing through barbed wire and scrambling over some rock walls and wading through puddles of cow manure, we were covered in mud, and we got to the side of the stage, and we're like, this had better be worth it, you know, because we were cold and wet and muddy. But I remember, hearing in the distance the kind of the first bangs of the anti-lag system, and it would have been, I think it was Andrew Nesbitt was the first car through. It would have been like a Subaru, I guess that time would have been like a Subaru S9, one of the X-Pro Drive cars. And you hear in the distance just the bang, 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 you know, in the distance. And then standing there on the side, all of a sudden the car bursts into view and just this rush of sound and color. And then it just envelops you, you know. And and then as the car passes by, there's that smell, you know, that it's almost acrid, but it's lovely too, that smell of rally car that kind of lingers in the moist air. And the smell of the carbon brakes and the clutch and the tires, and it kind of brings into focus what you just saw. And then in Ireland, the cars ran at, you know, 30-second intervals, so just before you had time to even process it, another car is coming by, another car, and another car. And that's how I fell in love with it.